New York Real Talk with Pamela Sue Mann, Alex Lefchuk, and some incredibly inspiring guest co-presenters from the city that never sleeps via Siren Radio and Southside Broadcasting.
Open your eyes. My mind is an animal, like a drop of moonlight to a wanting gaze. Stare honestly into the crooked hallways of this crooked place where the ones who gave themselves now give to the soil. Not my words, but the fantastic poetry of our guest on New York Real Talk today. It's Sarah Finn. How are you, Sarah?
Hi, Fim. Hi.
There we are, all connected together as if by magic, really. And indeed, Sarah said the opening words, abracadabra. She was just sorting out her sound and line from that point of view. Pamela, I've just given a short excerpt from some of Sarah's fabulous poetry. We've also had a listen to launch this particular edition of New York Real Talk to Vanishing, which is an awesome little number. It carries with it all sorts of echoes and lines with respect to that. So it's over to you to start doing the interview. Off you go, Pam.
Goodness, where do I begin? I actually am really a huge fan now. I've known Sarah for a while, and I've been just like the deep dive over the past few days, and I really admire your work, really, really, very much so. Like, I'm glad I didn't know so much about your work in all this time that I've known you, because I probably would have fangirled and been really obnoxious.
No, stop.
your poetry, the depth, your voice, oh my God, you've got like the voice of an angel who's lived a billion years. I mean that in the best way. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, I don't think Pamela's suggesting that you are a billion years old. Although having said that, Sarah, technically we are all the products of hydrogen atom evolving over the billions of years since the major explosion that launched the Big Bang in the first place. So there we go.
That's right. Well, yes, we've all been cooked. I love it.
You but I'm not both, sure whether I mean, there was a question there, Pam.
You have the loveliest voice, Alex. You have the loveliest voice.
Oh, please.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, but you just have a lovely voice, I had to tell you.
Well, for sure. Pamela only works with people who have got reasonable vocal cords. It's a well-known fact. She has it as a rider in most of her contracts. So there we are.
I think that you are the first person I've ever seen make Alex blush.
Oh. Already,
in less than 5 minutes.
Uh-huh. Look at those cheeks.
Okay. So let's move on to the question. Was there a question there, Pamela? Or are you just going to go into something completely different? I mean, I could say what's the weather like in Woodstock, but you know, who knows?
The weather, actually, well, yes.
Yeah, I would like to know what age you were when you wrote your very first poem.
What was the question? Say it again, the beginning.
Yeah, okay. When you wrote your first poem, were you out of the womb?
I don't rightly know. Wow, that's such a lovely question. Well, I guess the first poem we all write is life, right? So I actually don't have a marvelous answer to that.
I do not.
I can tell you though that whatever has been written within me, you know, from the ones who came before me, you know, tangled up in my genetics, whatever that is, that's probably the first poem. And I owe it to a lot of wonderful women and men who survived unthinkable things and created whatever it is that I am written in there. So I'm grateful for whatever that poem is. And I love the question. It's beautiful. I'll think about it a little.
I mean, maybe if we just qualify it by the piece of poetry we launched this whole piece with, "My mind is an animal like a drop of moonlight to a wanting gaze." Was that something that effectively flowed from you automatically? Was it almost a case of you were channeling the words? Was it something you had to really craft? Every little vowel, every little consonant had to be sort of, you know, you sort of sweating blood over. How did you actually develop it in the process?
Sweating blood. I love that. No, I just, there's no process. Usually I think I start writing when I just don't know what else to do with myself. But that poem I wrote a long time ago. And I think usually it's just, oh, I have a pen, you know, it's that simple. Like, I don't think it's very complicated, or I have a napkin, you know, or we have something to do it with and capture it with. But I think it's actually happening all the time in most of the artists that I know. And the question is, are you able to avail yourself of that at the moment? Can you make space and just write? And One person who's very important in my life, which is David Barron, who I make these albums with. I think we've made, you know, 8 or 9 by now together, maybe more. So one of the things that I think I learned from him a long time ago was that it's very much about making yourself available to practice your craft, to just make the time to be there. And if nothing happens, then nothing happens. But I've become very accustomed to that. And I think now, after doing it for so long, really from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to sleep, the only question is, do we have more energy to create right now? And can I stay awake to do this right now? And that was a wonderful thing because he's a wonderful person. He's also a very disciplined person, and he's made a lot of music with brilliant people. And there's a reason, because I think that patience and the ability to concentrate are two very important things that we have to cultivate in ourselves. I personally have a lot of trouble with them, and I spend a lot of time working on my patience, my ability to concentrate, my ability to really be where I am, to be present. And if I'm with someone, to be entirely with them. If I'm without them, to be entirely without them. So I think it really boils down to cultivating concentration and patience so that we can put that into the moment we're in, hopefully doing something we love. And if it's something we don't love to do, but something we feel we need to do, then hopefully we can also be entirely present for that and learn as much as we can and grow as much as we can from that moment. Because let's face it, life is made up of a lot of those moments. So even if we're going through something extremely traumatic or difficult, or we're with someone who is, I think that those are actually the times of incubation for artists that are very important to be present for entirely, not to run away from, but to really go into it completely and be there completely and gather from it whatever we can. And then I find that later on, those experiences sink in, and then sing about them and you make art about them. And that's, you know, that's a beautiful thing. I'm very glad, like, I'm very grateful to be an artist like that.
So in essence, sir, so you seem to be arguing for a mindfulness in your music.
Yeah. In our lives, right?
Yeah.
I think in our lives, and I think that that makes itself known with whatever you put out, whether you're a musician or whether you're just...
Or a poet, or a sculptor, or an artist, or a golfer, or any of those characteristics.
Exactly. Any kind of human being. I think how present you are influences the quality of whatever it is you're doing, whatever it is you're going to create, or whoever it is you're going to affect. So we have to be conscious. Otherwise, we may really create harm. And ultimately, that's what I think we have to avoid. You know, we have to avoid creating harm first, and then next, hopefully we can contribute something beautiful to the lives of the people around us. And, you know, la-di-day, we're not here for that long. So gotta do that.
but in comparison to your average mayfly, we are eternal. So, you know, everything is relative in its own way, basically. So
you know, I just love you. Over. Yes. Mayflies. I just love him. Look at him.
You know, it's so interesting because as you're speaking, in terms of the creativity, it is, you know, Jean Cocteau once said, art is not a pastime, it's a priesthood. And in following on what you're saying, of making yourself available, because there's a sort of excavation that certain sorts of minds have, where they're always sort of questioning and excavating everything that's happening. And then at a point, making oneself available when that pen is in your hand and that paper is, or anything, toilet paper.
Which we've all done, honey, let's face it. You know, we've all done it.
Then, you know, that is in itself a practice. Because, you know, when you have that moment and you sit, you've got everything you need. You're open. it's you're available to it, and it comes through. And when one lives their life in that way, it's a flow. It's a flow. You're not sitting there going, what rhymes with can? You know?
No, we don't want to be thinking about what rhymes with can, because you'll be stuck there forever. You'll never get to the next thing. I mean, think about how many things actually rhyme with can. It's appalling, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But yes, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, it's something I strive for, to be where I am. It's not an easy thing to do.
Let's talk a bit about the vanishing. What effectively led you to create that notion? Because obviously it carries with it lots of connotations, literally the evanescence, the fading into memory of things past, the whole notion of remembrance of things past, à la recherche du temps perdu, the Marcel Proust line from that point of view. What from your own point of view, actually led you to take this line for the vanishing?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Proust. I was just falling into one of his audiobooks not that long ago. But certainly, you know, I was not conscious of a lot of these ideas. So when I'm in the studio with David, I tend to think that I know that I create my worst art when I'm thinking too much. When I'm thinking about it, it's awful. So I do everything I can not to think, and that is my process. And David makes that easy because he doesn't give me the time to think. He just has this way of almost confusing you into the moment if you start to think too much. And he knows artists so well. So it's not exactly, it's a positive way of influencing them. It's slightly manipulative. I've always thought, you know, you fucker, you know, but he has this way of knowing what you're going to do before you do it, and of making the space so inviting that you fall into it. And there's no, at least for me, there's no amount of self-consciousness. I've been working with him long enough. We work very fast. There's no thinking. It's just keyboard, this, that, that, bum, 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 bum. And then, you know, some hours later, you have a song.
Oh.
And then
I love confusing you into the moment. That's brilliant. Yeah.
He also is not a big proponent of taking too long once the song is created. He's not into, oh, we're just going to beat this into the ground. It's just, this is what it is, and it's done. And if I say something and I start tweaking about some little thing, unless I'm very persistent, he just says, just stop. But it's very rare that I do that, because I trust him implicitly. So when you have that trust, and you have such a respect, I mean, I could not have more respect for that man than I do. And I could not have more trust in his talent. So there's nothing between in the creative process. There's no walls, and it just flows. And it's the most beautiful space on earth. His studio is up on a mountain in Boyceville. And, you know, we have bears and hawks and bats and things, and it's just heaven on earth. It's my favorite place on earth. And I've been a few places on earth, and I tell him all the time, I say, your Sun Mountain is my favorite place in the world to be. Creating music there. And of course, after you work with someone for 15 years, you know, things get good.
To paraphrase the well-worn phrase, you could actually say, to manipulate is human, to create divine. Which brings us neatly around to the next track, which is Human. Again, when I first saw this, I thought, oh, it's a cover version, obviously, of the Human League song Human, or it's other thing relating to human and humanity, etc. I couldn't have been further from the truth. It's a wonderful, resonant aspect of the whole piece. Would you like to talk us through Human, please, which we're just about to hear?
You don't need to hide. Let your love shine. We don't need no walls. Take them all down. Well, actually, that one was influenced by a book. Can you guess which one? Because you seem to have a pretty good intuition of what I'm reading, which I really like.
We just like to do our research. I'm not sure. I mean, we could be talking about being
I've never
human.
spoken about it. I just think personally, I get the sense that you read quite a bit of philosophy. So you can think of it was I had a copy of Human All Too Human in my hand, and I really went into those words. And I highlight books like a crazy person, and I draw little things in them. And I don't do this for any other reason other than I really enjoy it. I really enjoy reading, and I find it to be kind of tragic that more young people don't have that gift, because I found it to be a wonderful respite from the world, particularly when I was young, and I still do. So I just remember having that book in the studio one day, and it's all bent out of shape and crumpled and awful and spilled coffee on it. I mean, it's a disaster, but I still have it like it's my Bible over there. And I don't think it's, again, I don't think it's on purpose, but I was just reading that book, and I think a lot of it soaked into me before we happened to be creating that song. So sometimes it's just more a matter of timing. You know, what is it you're filling your mind with at that moment is going to come out in whatever you're creating. So I make a conscious effort to not fill my mind with nonsense and garbage and things that don't matter as much as possible, because of course we have to do that to a degree just to even turn the car on and get there, you know. But I really do make an effort to read different things around the time that I'm recording, even more so than normal, and just let those things sink in to put me in a particular focused space so that when I get to Dave, I'm not just a disaster, because I can be easily a disaster.
I find that very hard to believe.
Well, I hide it well, honey, you know. I'm wonderful at the disguise.
Yeah,
But
Human
thank you.
is human.
Thank you.
It's so it's a film in and of itself. It's a world, and it's I love worlds, and just give me a good world to climb into, but it's got to be a convincing world. It's got to be, you know, like no air pockets, no leaks. It's got to be a world, and Human is absolutely world. I had it on repeat before we in fact I think I'm in that song right now. I think that's what I see around me. I don't think I've left it. You have created such a world that I'm in that world that you created. I'm trying to be in the present, but it's really hard because I'm in Human right now.
Maybe we can be in both. One thing also I should say about Human is that there are so, as you know, there's so many rare analog synthesizers in Dave's room. So he's
Yeah,
remarkable that
amazing.
way. I mean, you're walking into this space of very rare machines, and he's one of them. And then there's all these other machines and instruments.
And they
So
all work perfectly.
they do. And there's a lot of them on that track. And he's a brilliant programmer, so that's no small thing either to know how to use all of these very rare machines, which is a real talent.
So inevitably then, given the use of technology, I have to ask the question, what is your position with respect to artificial intelligence and the notion that who knows, yourself and Pamela could be programming the next generation of chatbots or musical musicians to effectively produce this, taking out the human part of the equation. Any thoughts on that?
I have a lot of thoughts on AI. How long do you have?
Oh, we're for you, Sarah, we can
Oh,
allow you at least 600 seconds.
600 seconds. Well, this is one of the primary topics that my father and I discuss. So I read a lot about it, and I can really fall on both sides. So I can see that as Neuralink, for instance. I mean, when you see a monkey sort of playing ping pong with itself, that's a very real shock to the system. I remember seeing that video and thinking, oh, it's here. Now, I think it could be incredible if you're a person with a traumatic brain injury. I think it could be incredible if you're a person with paralysis. That something like Neuralink, for instance, could be life-saving, right? Of course, and I don't know if Pamela knows this already, but I've done a lot of studying on what Elon Musk does. I'm really into SpaceX. SpaceX is actually one of my favorite.
It's a lot more positive than Twitter, let's face it. I mean, you know, Elon, what are you thinking of with respect to Twitter? You stick with the Mars program.
Yeah, so I didn't mean to digress, but I think that you know, Neuralink, full self-driving, SpaceX, I think there's a lot of amazing technology that's happening now. I understand why people feel it should be regulated. Obviously, this could potentially be very dangerous. Once the learning process accelerates and we lose control. There's a wonderful interview actually that I saw recently with Lex Fridman. I don't know if you know who he is, but he's this wonderful guy. I would be ashamed to mispronounce his name because he's so brilliant, but I'll find it and I'll send it to Pamela. But in the interview, you know, he's kind of on the other side. So he's for, we better really get on top of this or it's very likely going to destroy us. And then over here, you have a lot of people that say, it's not that bad. It's going to be fine. I do think it should be regulated. I think it's really important that we don't have runaway AI. You know, that to me is actually something that keeps me up at night. But I also don't think that I have that much control over it right now. So I really try not to melt on subjects. I just try to learn as much as I can about these things. And obviously I'm no expert, but I would call myself an enthusiast. So, you know, there's a lot of amazing technology that's evolving. I do have friends that are paralyzed. I do have friends with traumatic brain injury. I follow Neuralink very carefully. I think that could be a life-saving tool for someone else. So how can I say that shouldn't exist? That may very well be the difference between them having a life or not. So I think it's really important that we start considering which tools are going to serve us, serve other people, you know, which are going to be helpful to humanity. Obviously, some people think becoming a multi-planetary species is essential, that humans may actually annihilate themselves. And I can't really say that I disagree with that so much. You know, I think we have a solid chance. Nuclear weapons technology, pandemics, who knows? But obviously, if you're someone that has vision, you're going to say, well, if there's a very high probability that humanity is going to destroy itself, then it would make sense to become a multiplanetary species. And I think when people are thinking in a very near-term frame of mind, it's very easy to forget, and I think hubris takes over. So they start thinking in this very shallow near-term way, well, we could be focusing all that energy on the oceans or on human beings. But the truth is that when we explore space, when we venture out into these places, and even on the International Space Station, the number of experiments that go on that benefit people on Earth, I think is just something most people don't think about that. So I think it's very important not to be short-sighted and not to think in the near term all the time. We have an obligation to humanity, all being humans, to do what we think is best for humanity, for each other, and for the humans that are going to come once we're gone, which we are all going to be, you know, everyone here, you know, and everyone that was ever born. So the question is, what is it that we do next, right? And I think that a lot of the people that have a near-term point of view, they also don't tend to have a very high opinion of humanity's long-term survival. They tend to, I think, have negative feelings about human beings. And that can come from their personal experience, or maybe it would come from, you know, the people that raised them, who knows, maybe it comes from their environment. But I, for one, think that humans have something extraordinary. Elon puts it as the light of consciousness, right? I know people have very strong opinions about him, but the bottom line is, if you actually watch every interview that man's ever done, which I can say that I have, out of nothing but pure curiosity. And the first one that really piqued my interest was a 60 Minutes interview he did a long time ago about the Australian energy crisis. And the reporter said to him, said, there are people that can't turn on the lights. There are people that can't make a sandwich. You know, they don't have energy right now because of this crisis. And I'm paraphrasing, of course. So when he heard this, you know, just tears came over him. You know, he began to cry in the interview in a way that was undeniably genuine. Nobody could say that that was not a genuine reaction. I get chills just thinking about that. And the reason I do is because when a scientist is not just a scientist, but has that level of empathy, there's something there that is very important to acknowledge. And when people dehumanize any person that's capable of that kind of empathy and that kind of sacrifice, it doesn't mean you're saying that they're perfect. I mean, I think it's very bizarre that we hold certain people that are in the light of celebrity, that we hold them to this perfect standard as if they're not human. That is very dangerous to me. I'm not a fan of deifying anyone, and I'm certainly not a fan of forgetting that everyone has blind spots. This is something you can say of the most brilliant person that has ever lived, and maybe the least brilliant person that's ever lived. We all have blind spots. But when I saw that interview and I saw that reaction come over him, I said, this is a person that cares about human beings. So his intention is to genuinely help people. And the level of sacrifice that he goes through, obviously, is an indication of that. And I think there's many people like him that have been vilified a lot of the time because they have money, you know? I think it's very easy to say, you know, basically to have this mob reaction to particular kinds of people. And I'm very much against that kind of thinking. It goes against everything I am. I'm a granddaughter of Holocaust survivors. We do not do mob thinking, you know, and anytime we see it, we have to fight it. And anytime you see an individual being ganged up upon by a mob, it doesn't matter what they've done. It's a terrible reflection on the worst parts of us that we always must fight. And I take it very, very seriously when I see that happening. And most often when you see that happening and you stand up for it, the mob will come to you, you know, then it'll come over you. And I think because now we live in a time where you can massively influence or even destroy someone's life with that kind of mob thinking, we have to fight it even more. And we particularly have to let young people know that that is not okay, that you have your own mind and you have to think for yourself and not succumb to this sort of mob thinking, which is so destructive. Now, I really went off of AI there.
It's Sarah, I was just going to say, it was a fascinating diversion on that line.
I'm so sorry.
The echo that I got was not necessarily Elon Musk, but I got an echo of the late Carl Sagan. And I think Carl Sagan, who obviously was a key influencer for Elon's thinking in terms of his budget for the whole thing. I think that's probably where we're coming to in terms of the space exploration and the need to actually go beyond that frontier. There is, of course, the other alternate viewpoint that you say we need to expand to the stars. Maybe we are, as we've already said, children of the stars, and people have already expanded to us, that the Bible effectively is the basic instruction booklet for the life experience. I'm just putting it out there. That's all.
You know, I do think the idea of the it's ironic because it's fear-based thinking. But if you think of a culture that survives atrocities and have every reason to fear everything, being really adamant about not getting into, as you say, mob mentality and fear-based thinking, which is actually irrational anyway, because if you think of the worst things that could happen to us in terms of naturally, they're going to happen.
Pamela, the acronym FEAR, false expectation appearing real.
Ah, there you go.
I like that.
I'm telling you.
When you said what you just said, going back to Carl Sagan, there's a great book he has called The Demon Haunted World, Science as a Candle in the Dark, where he talks a lot about this. And superstition is rampant, you know? It's unbelievable.
Sarah, we were praying to the gods that you could connect with us today. I mean, it just goes to show, you know, step aside from that and look what happened.
Our blind
spots. Yes, I'll make them all lasagna and then they'll want to become human.
Yeah, exactly.
That I can make a mean lasagna.
I'll be over in an hour and a half.
all sorts of things. Pamela, astonishingly, we're probably not going to even have time for...
I didn't even get to AI, by the way. I just went off, but I have so much to say on that, but I'll stop.
Well, no, that clearly means we need to actually go to the last two questions, and hopefully they're yes in both instances. Pamela, over to you, please.
Right, because the last two questions have to do with the future, and I know that Alex and I are both hoping that the future, as regards yourself, will go in...
Affirmatively.
So the first question is, have you had fun with us?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I'm not very social. So it really says something that I'm really enjoying my time with you. Thank you.
That leads us to the second. And thank you for thanking us. Thank you. The second question is, will you please come back soon?
Yes.
To talk about AI, if nothing else.
So, yes, and also to see your lovely rosy cheeks.
Oh, well, there we are.
And we would need a week for AI. So make sure to set aside the proper time. And,
that's only 168 hours, Sarah. So, you know, 7 days, 168 hours, we can actually allocate that. So that's good. You know, we'll be
my father would love to be involved in the AI discussion, too.
Bring him in. You know, it's an honor. It's an absolute honor to have you on. And thank you so much for coming on. And we are going to take you to task and actually get out the datebook and you know, make you commit. Yes.
And we leave, of course, with what is my personal favorite of the three tracks you actually sent over. Human, I thoroughly enjoyed, like Pam. I liked, obviously, Vanishing, as mentioned. But we come to Halo in particular. Would you like to just share with us and introduce Halo 24 Bits, to be precise?
Thank you for being so precise. Yes, Halo. Halo is a song I wrote a few years ago, and I didn't get a chance to record it until relatively recently. And I ended up recording it on David's 100-year-old piano. Obviously, when you listen to it, you can hear that it's very much about what it's like to love someone who can't love themselves. And I think that's a theme that seems to be more common than I thought it was, now that I'm getting some reactions to this song. So it's going to be everywhere on the 20th. It's on Bandcamp right now, in case anyone wants to listen to it. And I'm so grateful. My fans have been really supportive of Bandcamp. So between Patreon, which I have people on there who help support my life and work, and between Bandcamp, I'm able to continue making music. And Halo is here because of those people. And so I have to thank them. Otherwise, I would be remiss not to thank them. So thank you. And that'll be everywhere. And I just showed Pamela the video.
Oh my God, the video is heartbreakingly beautiful. Really, honestly,
I was almost going to delete it. And then you said that. So now I'm not going to delete it.
So there we are. You know, it's a perfect way to wrap up the radio side of things with the attitude of gratitude. That just leaves us, Pamela, with two final questions. You know what they are from your point of view, of course. New York is home to what?
Okay, I know Sarah's going to get this. She's going to get this. I don't think any guest has gotten this, but she's
what are we
going
doing?
New York is home to the world's finest.
The world's finest pickle.
New York is home to the world's finest. I'm supposed to finish this?
Oh, pickle.
There you are.
Oh,
I know. I don't understand it either, Sarah. Oh. But you know what? The hey, we carry on.
I love pickles.
Here's Halo.
Exactly.
I never met a pickle I didn't love.
You said that you loved me. You'd never ever hurt me. How quickly you desert me. You're pushing me away, pushing me away, breaking my heart, and no one wants to feel. The way that I do, no one wants to walk through these doors. Where you're walking through. It's killing me today, killing me today. If only I could run away. I can see your halo, but baby, I can't let go. You're pushing me away, pushing me away. You're breaking my heart, babe. I can see your halo, but baby, I can't let go. You're pushing me away, pushing me away. You're breaking my heart, babe. You said you'd come to cuddle me, wake me up with coffee, and tell me sweet stories. Then you said, look me in the eye, look me in the eye. Say that we would never die. No one wants to feel the way that I do. No one wants to walk through these doors we're walking through. It's killing me today, killing me today. 'Cause I can see your halo, pushing me away. You're breaking my heart, babe. I can see your halo, but baby, I can't let go. But you're pushing me away, pushing me away. I can see your I know that I got to.